Chapter 4. What to do for others as they die. At the moment of their greatest vulnerability, people in our world are abandoned and left almost totally without support or insight. This is a tragic and humiliating state of affairs, which must change. Sogyal Rinpoche. The View. When someone is dying, there is much that we, as close family or friends, can do to help spiritually. Even though taking care of them physically may be part of our job, our main concern is taking care of the mind, both theirs and ours. This first of all means taking care of our own mind, because states of mind are easily transmitted, and the attitudes of caregivers can significantly help or hinder a dying person. The essence of the following instruction is to help everyone, especially the dying person, relax. We want the dying person to depart in a positive state of mind filled with love. This isn't easy, because death is a squeeze. Sogyal Rinpoche says that death is a mirror in which the whole of life is reflected. I would add the words, and magnified. The good, the bad, and the ugly all squirt out of the dying person, family, and friends. Family dynamics, which often means family neurosis, is heightened and exposed. Love, compassion, regret, anger, resentment, stress, greed, envy, virtually every human emotion is brought out and blown up. In caring for my terminally ill parents, I was sometimes startled by what I said and did. My mother died of Alzheimer's, which can be brutal for caretakers, and my father died from esophageal cancer, which required multiple hospital visits and challenging home care. I expressed moments of genuine selflessness mixed in with times of real selfishness. In retrospect, it was like a test. It showed me how far I had progressed on my path and how far I had yet to go. I didn't always like what I saw in this mirror of death, but I saw it and learned. You can study, practice, and read about death all you want, but until it is in your face, it's difficult to know how you will respond. This is why it's good to be around death. It helps you to both assess and prepare. So acknowledge the crunch and that you are human. Be patient with what you see reflected in yourself and others. Be kind to yourself, to those around you, and realize that everybody is doing their best. Don't get hung up on helping. As caregivers, we may receive a subtle self-directed pat on the back from serving others. Always check your motivation. Don't come in with an agenda to conduct a good death or to impose your version of one. This is not your death. Let the dying person die in their own unique way and support them in that. If they want to resist death or deny that they are dying, we should support them, even though that view may be difficult for us. There's no need to encourage such a view, but it's not our place to challenge it. Dying people want comfort, not confrontation. For caregivers, be careful not to should on the dying person or yourself. Do not feel that things should go a particular way or that you should be feeling a certain emotion. Bring the confidence born from preparation, then let the situation and the dying person guide you. In this delicate dance, the dying person leads. Your job is to be aware of their needs, not to impose your own. Do not force them into your version of a good death. I once saw a cartoon of a man lying on his deathbed, looking concerned. A few people were standing around the bed, and the caption above the worried man said, "How's my dying?" Joan Halifax, who has worked with the dying for over 30 years, writes, "The concept of a good death can put unbearable pressure on dying people and caregivers, and can take us away from death's mystery and the richness of not knowing. Our expectations of how someone should die can give rise to subtle or direct coerciveness. No one wants to be judged for how well she dies. Death with dignity is another concept that can become an obstacle to what is really happening. Dying can be very undignified. Often, it's not dignified at all, with soiled bedclothes and sheets, bodily fluids and flailing, nudity and strange sexuality, confusion and rough language. Good death, death with dignity, can be unfortunate fabrications that we use to try to protect ourselves against the sometimes raw and wondrous truth of dying. Frank Ostaseski, the founding director of the first Buddhist hospice in America, says, "Everybody who is dying has a story about how one dies, and that story shapes the way they die. It helps to discover more about the story someone is holding and to work with it, rather than to try to change it or impose some other story. Approach the dying person not with answers, but with openness. Don't feel like you need to get it all right." As Ostaseski says, the process is characterized much more by mystery than mastery. If you're close to the person, it can feel like part of you is also dying. Be aware of your place in the death and your sense of empathetic merging. Balance this with a healthy separation from the dying person and the events that surround them. You have to take care of yourself in order to take care of them. The most helpful person is one who is comfortable with death, with groundlessness, and with not knowing. Like a strong rider on a frisky horse, this is someone who can ride on top of whatever's happening without being thrown by it and without trying to fix it. Expect the unexpected. Learn to appreciate silence and uncertainty. This is where your practice of bodhicitta, which helps you keep an open heart, and shamatha, which helps you keep a steady mind, places you in good stead. Death is unsettling because it is foreign. This is what's meant by groundlessness. Trungpa Rinpoche said that groundlessness means that ground is unknown to you. You just don't know what's going on. But you're okay with that. It's your stability in the midst of such instability that brings the most benefit. Steadiness naturally attracts and soothes others, especially when they're losing it. They will take refuge in your presence and peace of mind. Some people want a great deal of support from their spiritual community while they die. Others want a more retreat-like approach. Complicated helping strategies and micromanaging everything can overwhelm the dying person and their caregivers. Keep it genuine and simple, and work from your heart. While there is much that we can do, the know-it-all does more harm than good. Our task is to support, love, and release the dying person. Don't get too invested in guiding them. Let them guide you. Be wary of talking traps, the things we might say out of anxiety or to break the silence. Avoid clichés like, "I know how you must be feeling." If you're not sure what to say that or don't say anything. Be quiet and listen. Don't be afraid of space. Be sensitive to the needs and wants of the departing person. Never impose your own. As Khalil Gibran said, "All can hear, but only the sensitive can understand." We often want things to go a certain way and don't realize how we influence events to that effect. Don't be religious, dogmatic, or too spiritual. You are there in someone's greatest hour as a caretaker, an honored guest. Remind yourself that it's a privilege to be with this person during this once-in-a-lifetime transition. Even though death is serious, there's no need to lose your sense of humor. On an absolute level, death is a big joke. There is no such thing as death. The yogi Gotsangpa sang, "When it's time to leave this body, this illusionary tangle, don't cause yourself anxiety and grief. The thing that you should train in and clear up for yourself, there's no such thing as dying to be done. It's just clear light, the mother, and child clear light uniting. When mind forsakes the body, sheer delight." Events surrounding death can be truly funny. There's no need to be overly somber, but don't bring a forced sense of humor or artificially try to enlighten the atmosphere. Just touch deeply into your heart, be yourself, and err on the side of silence. We are there to hold the dying one, to provide a loving container that allows them to relax, and to encourage them not to be afraid. The key to what generates the best container is often provided by the dying person themselves. There are two helpful things to practice in this situation: sacred listening and unconditional presence. Sacred listening. Sacred listening means to listen not just with your ears, but with your heart. You won't hear what needs to be heard if you're speedy or overly emotional. Slow down. Pause before you enter the room and collect yourself. Check your motivation for being there. Don't be afraid to pause while in the room or to step out if you need to get it together. You can't offer the healing power of space until you give yourself some space. Joan Halifax says, "Listening means that we have stabilized our minds so completely that the person who is speaking can actually hear themselves through our stillness. It is a quality of radiant listening, of luminous listening, of vibrant listening, but it is very still. It is listening with attention, with open-heartedness, without prejudice. The quality of attention that we are invited to bring is as if the person who is speaking will not live another day, as if they were saying their last words. We listen with our whole being." The Roman Stoic philosopher Seneca said, "Behold me in my nakedness, my wounds, my pain, my tongue which cannot express my sorrow, my terror, my abandonment. Listen to me for a day, an hour, a moment, lest I expire in my terrible wilderness, my lonely silence. O God, is there no one to listen?" Be prepared to hear the same old stories from elderly relatives. For whatever reason, this satisfies a need for them. Be ready for outbursts of anger or frustration, sometimes directed at you. Don't take it personally. Anyone under severe stress needs to release the tension. Meet them emotionally and spiritually where they are, not where you want them to be. Be sensitive to the possibility that you may not be needed or even wanted, and watch for signs of fatigue, things like lack of concentration, restlessness, drowsiness, and labored breathing. If those occur, it's time for you to leave or to let your loved one doze off. Sacred listening is an exercise in empathy. It's the ability to think and feel yourself into the inner life of another person. Put yourself in their shoes, crawl into their skin, get out of yourself and into them. An empathetic, not reactive, response validates the person's feelings and invites them to open up and express themselves. It helps them relax. Guidelines for sacred listening and empathetic response include the following. Don't interrupt the speaker and don't rush them. Be aware of yourself, your personal issues and fears, as you enter their space and as you converse. If you don't understand something, ask for clarification. Show your concern by asking considerate questions. Realize you can't fix the situation. Accept it. Refrain from advising or contradicting. Display empathy, not pity. Keep on subject until the person has finished expressing themselves. Be aware of when you feel the urge to be cheerful or want to falsely reassure them. Never prolong a conversation where you are doing most of the talking. Be sensitive to your own anxiety and urge to fill the space. Relate to the person, not the illness. Let the dying person talk about issues of their choice. Acknowledge them with a nod, a gentle squeeze of their hand, or reflect back what you just heard. People who are dying want to be heard, not taught. Sogyal Rinpoche says, "I have been amazed again and again by how, if you just let people talk, giving them your complete and compassionate attention, they will say things of a surprising spiritual depth, even when they think they don't have any spiritual beliefs. Everyone has their own life wisdom, and when you let a person talk, you allow this life wisdom to emerge. I have often been very moved by how you can help people to help themselves by helping them to discover their own truth, a truth whose richness, sweetness, and profundity they may never have suspected. The sources of healing and awareness are deep within each of us, and your task is never under any circumstances to impose your beliefs, but to enable them to find these within themselves." Here are some tips for what to say and what not to say to someone who is facing death. What not to say? Hang in there. You're strong. You can make it. Fight it. Don't let it get you. What does the doctor know? You may live for years. Don't give up. We need you. Everything will be fine. What is helpful to say? I'm here for you. How can I help you? How do you feel? Would you like to talk about anything in particular? It must be so hard for you. I'm so proud to be your friend, brother, child. I love you. Hopes and fears of the dying. Effective communication can be enhanced by having some understanding of what the dying person may be going through. Some of the unspoken hopes of the dying include the following: that we will pass with dignity, surrounded by loved ones; that we will get better and be productive again; that tomorrow will be a better day, next week a better week; that our dying will not be prolonged or painful; that we will not be a burden; that our families will be able to go on without us; that everything is taken care of; that we are having a good dharmic death; that we will reunite with our guru, or go to a higher rebirth. Fears around dying include the following concerns: fear of annihilation, fear of not being a good dharma student, of not having a good death, fear of being unprepared and slipping into the lower realms, fear of karma, of what the next life might be, fear of abandonment or isolation, fear of the process of dying, which includes fears that it will be painful, that we will lose our dignity and independence, that we will become a burden, fear of the unknown, fear of leaving everything behind, of letting go. Holding environments. Dzogchen Ponlop Rinpoche says that the best thing we can do for the dying is to create a proper environment. The pediatrician and child psychiatrist Donald Winnicott wrote about holding environments, how a proper environment is critical for healthy growth and development. As with the beginning of life, so with its end. If a proper holding environment is established around death, a good death will naturally take place within it. The caregiver's job, as a midwife into the bardos, is to create the space that allows the dying person to relax and release. The Buddha's teaching, the Dharma, is expressly for this purpose. It offers the ultimate holding environment. Dharma is derived from the Sanskrit root dhar, which means support, carrying, holding. If someone is held properly, physically or spiritually, they will surrender to that loving embrace. Think about how good you feel when you get a nice warm hug. That's the feeling you want to create. Holding environments are really hugging environments. I have been with dying people who asked that their bed be moved into the center of the room so their loved ones can sit all around them. At the request of the dying person, I have seen family members, caretakers, and even pets crawl into bed with the dying person so they can better hold them. As with meditation, the maxim, not too tight, not too loose, is the key. If we hold them too tight, that amounts to grasping and will hinder their transition. If we hold them too loosely or not at all, that can make them feel abandoned. We always bring an environment with us, a space or mood that represents our state of mind. If we're anxious and uptight, the dying person tunes into that. If we're open, spacious, and relaxed, they will tune into that. Many hospice workers comment that as the dying person nears death, their mind becomes less contained by their body. They're more aware of the atmosphere. It's almost as if their mind is spilling into the room. The greatest gift we can therefore bring to a dying person is our unconditional presence, an attendance that fills the atmosphere with stability and love. Kenpo Karta Rinpoche says, even if the person has lived a very unwholesome life, if you have been able to positively affect that person's final state of mind, a beneficial rebirth may occur. That is one of the highest benefits you could have affected in the life of another person. Unconditional presence means unconditional acceptance. This is the best holding environment. If the death is rough, we accept and work with that. If it's easy, we accept that. We don't judge, impose, expect, or desire anything. This atmosphere of acceptance is contagious and will help the dying person slide into a similar state of ease. Psychologist Marie Duenzel writes, creating this atmosphere of warmth and calm around a sick person who is in torment is unquestionably the most beneficial thing one can do for him or her. She relates that for one nurse who was able to do this consistently, the patients on her shift always required fewer tranquilizers. Unconditional presence is a state developed by meditation, and it propagates the space of meditation. Therefore, one of the best things to do for the dying is to practice with them. If the person isn't a meditator, ask them first if it's okay to sit quietly with them, or just do it unobtrusively. Never force anything. An excessively spiritual atmosphere can have the opposite effect and unsettle the dying person. Because their heart-mind is spilling into space, we can mix our heart-mind with theirs and actually practice for them. Christine Longacre writes, "At the time of death, our spiritual practice can affect the person's mind and heart in an extraordinary way. When we are resting in the vivid presence of the true nature of mind, or invoking the radiant, loving presence of the Buddha or divine being, we are literally creating a sacred environment for him to die within. Our devoted spiritual practice may become his actual experience at the moment of death. It will make a strong imprint on his mind, and this last imprint is what he will wake up to after death." The dying person tunes into all kinds of unconscious messages, so honesty, particularly honesty with ourselves, is crucial. Now is the time for heart-to-heart communication. But don't be too forward. Even though the raw nature of death invites truth, this doesn't mean we have to express every thought. Unloading on the dying person only serves ourselves. Sacred listening helps us decide what needs to be said. If your loved one is open for guidance, it's important not to give too many instructions and that they not be too profound. This can overwhelm a person when their energy is low. Share something pithy and heartfelt, an inspiring message they can take with them. Gently repeat the instruction. Keep it simple. Trungpa Rinpoche said, "It seems that actually relating with the dying person is very important to provide the whole ground of dying. Death is no longer a myth at that point. It is actually happening. You are dying. We are watching your dying. But we are your friends, therefore we watch your dying. We believe in your rugged quality of leaving your body and turning into a corpse. That is beautiful. That's the finest and best example of friendship that you could demonstrate to us, that you know you are dying, and we know that you are going to die. That's really beautiful. We are really meeting together properly and beautifully, exactly at the point. It is fantastic communication." That in itself is such a beautiful and rich quality of communication that it really presents a tremendous further inspiration as far as the dying person is concerned. One central ingredient in a good holding environment is the reliability of it. Dying people are dealing with unpredictability and groundlessness, so it's important for them to know they can count on someone or something. Never offer more than you can deliver. Their body and mind, life itself, is already letting them down. Don't let them down further by not showing up when you said you would, or not keeping a promise. The bedridden have few distractions. Every outside contact becomes disproportionately important. Your visit might be an insignificant part of your week, but it may be the one event the person was eagerly awaiting. Be firm in your commitments. Creating the environment. With this guiding view, there are many things we can do to create a good holding environment. The dying person can help by planning this environment in advance and leaving instructions in a Dharma box. In addition to the farewell checklist in Appendix 1, here are some suggestions. Set up a shrine in the room. Put up photographs of their teachers. Burn incense. Play recordings of their favorite talks or chants. Play uplifting music. Namkha Drime Rinpoche says that it's important to have a statue of Guru Rinpoche in the room. Bring flowers, beautiful art, or whatever the dying person feels will enrich their space. The idea is to generate an uplifted atmosphere. Create a space that elevates the mind of the dying person or anyone who walks into the room. People often want to come by and lend support or say goodbye. While this is a wonderful offering, caretakers should be sensitive to how this can drain the dying person. Dying means that the life force is being exhausted, which implies that energy is low. The need for sleep increases. Don't be shy to tell people that visits may not be possible. When the dying person stops communicating or is slipping in and out of consciousness, it could be time to curb or end the visitations. Limit the space to caretakers and loved ones. They may be dealing with perplexing experiences as the outer world disappears and their inner world takes over. Now is the time to let them go into that inner world. Tugging them out may confuse them, so honor their silence with your own. To let them rest in peace, we have to let them go in peace. When death is imminent, overly emotional people should settle themselves or leave. Strong emotions, while understandable, can disturb the dying person and adversely affect their transition. Because of the law of proximate karma, the last thing on a person's mind before death often becomes the first thing on their mind after death. The wailing and weeping of loved ones can make the dying person grasp onto life and prolong unnecessary suffering. They often hold on for the sake of those around them. How would you feel if you knew you had to go, but your loved ones were holding on to you and begging you to stay? This grasping mentality favors rebirth as a hungry ghost, which is an unfortunate rebirth. More helpful is to try to lift the dying person into higher states of mind and send them on their way. Looking forward. If the dying person is receptive, remind them that their nature is completely pure and good, and that they are about to experience that purity and goodness. Tell them that their innate brilliance and perfection are about to shine forth. This gives them something beautiful to look forward to. For a strong practitioner, death and rebirth are like going to sleep and waking up to a new day. Go to sleep satisfied with your life, and realize you have something to look forward to tomorrow. One of the best things we can therefore do to benefit the dying person is to help them look forward. Sokni Rinpoche says, "Tell them that the relative is dying, the ultimate is not dying. Give them hope that they can recognize the ultimate, the nature of their mind, the mind that is unchanging and undying. You have to give a little promotion on the deathless side." This is why it's so important to understand what happens after death. So much suffering occurs because everyone is looking back. While it is healthy, up to a point, to reminisce over a life well lived and to celebrate one's accomplishments, it's more important to let go of that life and look forward. Death forces the issue and demands release. The sooner we get this lesson, the easier the journey will be. If we remain anchored in the past, even during life, we will suffer unnecessarily. Depression is nearly synonymous with having nothing to look forward to, and a great deal of psychopathology is born from our inability to let go. If we view death as total annihilation with nothing whatsoever to look forward to, we may suffer in direct proportion to the strength of that view, which is actually no view at all. That is depressing. Death is transformed when we replace that dark view with one based on light. This is why the greatest practitioners, like Gotsongpa, look forward to death with sheer delight. The greatest opportunity for enlightenment is about to unfold. If that doesn't excite you, nothing will. So if the dying person is open to it, remind him or her of this view by pointing out that the greatest practitioners look forward to death. It's never too late to be inspired. Sogyal Rinpoche says, "Even if we have accumulated a lot of negative karma, if we are able to make a real change of heart at the moment of death, it can decisively influence our future and transform our karma, for the moment of death is an exceptionally powerful opportunity to purify karma." Remind the departing one that they are about to merge their mind with the wisdom mind of their master, and that the compassionate Buddhas are waiting to lead them to a pure land. Remind them that the truest aspect of their being, the very subtle inner body, does not die. Replace fear with hope. People often grow a great deal when they are faced with their own mortality. Never underestimate someone's capacity for progress. many hospice workers and spiritual caretakers say that the changes are sometimes phenomenal. With the proper view, it's easy to become inspired about death. Not in a suicidal way, but in realizing the incredible opportunity that lies ahead. The end of life is the culmination of life, its crowning moment. So elevate your view and look forward to the coronation. Advice from Sogyal Rinpoche. Sogyal Rinpoche's book, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, is a modern masterpiece. Every serious student should own this text. In Part 2, Dying, it offers some of the best advice ever written. In multiple readings of this seminal book, I have realized that in terms of helping others to die, there's simply no better way to say it. The following section is a collection of excerpts summarizing Rinpoche's teaching on how to help others die. I have inserted my own commentary between his extensive quotations to elaborate some of the important points. From Sogyal Rinpoche. The most essential thing in life is to establish an unafraid, heartfelt communication with others, and it is never more important than with a dying person. Often the dying person feels reserved and insecure, and is not sure of your intentions when you first visit. So don't feel anything extraordinary is supposed to happen. Just be natural and relaxed. Be yourself. Often, dying people do not say what they want or mean, and the people close to them do not know what to say or do. It's hard to find out what they might be trying to say, or even what they might be hiding. Sometimes not even they know. So the first essential thing is to relax any tension in the atmosphere in whatever way comes most easily and naturally. Don't try to impress anyone with your wisdom and compassion. Be yourself. That is wisdom and compassion. Try to imagine what the dying one must be going through. Rinpoche continues. Once trust and confidence have been established, allow the dying person to bring up the things he or she really wants to talk about. Encourage the person warmly to feel as free as possible to express thoughts, fears, and emotions about dying and death. This honest and unshrinking bearing of emotion is central to any possible transformation, of coming to terms with life or dying a good death, and you must allow the person complete freedom and give your full permission to say whatever he or she wants. Don't interrupt, deny, or negate what the dying person has to say. Give them the space they need. The dying are in the most vulnerable time of their lives. They're often confused and overwhelmed, so be sensitive and open. Practice sacred listening and allow them to feel your unconditional presence. Rinpoche continues. You will need all your skill and resources of sensitivity and warmth and loving compassion to enable them to reveal themselves. Sit there with your dying friend or relative as if you had nothing more important or enjoyable to do. As in all grave situations of life, two things are most useful, a common sense approach and a sense of humor. Humor has a marvelous way of lightening the atmosphere, helping to put the process of dying in its true and universal perspective, and breaking the over-seriousness and intensity of the situation. It is essential not to take anything too personally. When you least expect it, dying people can make you the target of all their anger and blame. As Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, anger and blame can be displaced in all directions and projected onto the environment at times, almost at random. They are losing everything, their home, relationships, body, even their mind. Who wouldn't feel sad, panicky, or angry? They may feel that no one wants to comprehend their innermost needs. So look past the momentary upheavals and look into their basic goodness. Let that goodness guide you. That is actually a Buddha that is dying. As Joan Halifax says, we don't help Buddhists die, we help Buddhas die. Don't forget their Buddha nature, and avoid getting tripped up by the momentary outbursts. Rinpoche continues, sometimes you may be tempted to preach to the dying, or to give them your own spiritual formula. Avoid this temptation absolutely. No one wishes to be rescued with someone else's beliefs. Remember, your task is not to convert anyone to anything, but to help the person in front of you get in touch with his or her own strength, confidence, faith, and spirituality, whatever that may be. Of course, if the person is really open to spiritual matters and really wants to know what you think about them, don't hold back either. Do not expect too much from yourself or expect your help to produce miraculous results in the dying person or save them. People will die as they have lived, as themselves. Also, don't be distressed if your help seems to be having very little effect and the dying person does not respond. We cannot know the deeper effects of our care. A dying person most needs to be shown as unconditional a love as possible, released from all expectations. Don't think you have to be an expert in any way. Be natural, be yourself, be a true friend, and the dying person will be reassured that you are really with them, communicating with them simply and as an equal, as one human being to another. Imagine that you are on that bed before you, facing your death. Imagine that you are there in pain and alone. Then really ask yourself, what would you most need? What would you most like? What would you really wish from the friend in front of you? You would find that what the dying person wants is what you would most want, to be really loved and accepted. People who are sick often long to be touched, to feel human. No one wants to be seen as a bag of disease. Remember the importance of physical holding environments. Rinpoche continues, a great deal of consolation can be given simply by touching their hands, looking into their eyes, gently massaging them or holding them in your arms, or breathing in the same rhythm gently with them. The body has its own language of love. Use it fearlessly, and you will find you bring to the dying comfort and consolation. Reassure that person that whatever he or she may be feeling, whatever his or her frustration and anger, it is normal. Dying will bring out many repressed emotions, sadness or numbness or guilt, or even jealousy of those who are still well. Allow these waves of strong feelings to wash over you, and your stability will invite their own. Rinpoche continues, don't try to be too wise. Don't always try to search for something profound to say. You don't have to do or say anything to make things better. Just be there as fully as you can. And if you are feeling a lot of anxiety and fear and don't know what to do, admit that openly to the dying person and ask his or her help. This honesty will bring you and the dying person closer together and help in opening up a freer communication. Sometimes the dying know far better than we how they can be helped, and we need to know how to draw on their wisdom and let them give to us what they know. Telling the truth. When people are dying, they should be told so, as quietly, as kindly, as sensitively, and as skillfully as possible. Most of the time, they know anyway, as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, they sense it by the changing attention, by the new and different approach that people take to them, by the lowering of voices or avoidance of sounds, by the tearful face of a relative or ominous, unsmiling member of the family who cannot hide his true feelings. They seem to know instinctively and often count on us to confirm their intuitions. Kubler-Ross also says that people often have an inner alert system that warns them of their own death. They need to prepare, to say goodbye, and to deal with practical issues. Rinpoche says, I believe dying to be a great opportunity for people to come to terms with their whole lives. We are really giving them the chance to prepare and to find their own powers of strength and the meaning of their lives. We think we're protecting the person who is dying by not telling them, but we're probably trying to protect ourselves. For many people, death is almost an embarrassment, a failure, the ultimate defeat. But it's more accurately a time of truth, a time to face reality. Codependent denial does not honor reality. Don't underestimate the dying person's capacity to face things squarely. There is power in acknowledging reality. Nothing cuts through ego's games and hurls you more directly into reality than death. Fears about dying. Being around dying people will almost force you to establish a relationship with your own fears about death. If you really want to help someone who is dying, especially with their fear of death, you have to relate to your own trepidations. By becoming familiar with your own fears and developing fearlessness, you will naturally convey that fearlessness to the dying person. Sogyal Rinpoche says, "Sometimes I think there could be no more effective way of speeding up our growth as human beings than working with the dying. Your fearlessness is contagious. It can provide exactly what the dying person and those around you need, the confidence to relax and let go. Imagine the anxiety and fear that may be screaming through the dying person. Fear of pain, suffering, indignity, dependence, meaninglessness, separation, the unknown, of losing control, of being forgotten. We leave this world alone, and fear heightens the sense of isolation." Rinpoche continues, "But when someone keeps company with you and talks of his or her own fears, then you realize fear is universal and the edge, the personal pain, is taken off it. Your fears are brought back to the human and universal context. Then you are able to understand, be more compassionate, and deal with your own fears in a much more positive and inspiring way." Our lives are lived with the unconscious motivation to avoid fear. It's the primordial emotion of samsara, that from which all other samsaric emotions arise. Now, at last, we have the opportunity to face it directly, befriend it, and transform it. Unfinished business. Many dying people suffer from a sense of unfinished business. This is partly why the bardo of letting go is painful. Sometimes this feeling comes from unfinished practical matters as mundane as the roof needing to be fixed. But most unfinished business is emotional, the dissonance of unresolved relationships. Rinpoche continues, "Usually unfinished business is the result of blocked communication. When we have been wounded, we often become very defensive, always arguing from a position of being right and blindly refusing to see the other person's point of view. Most of us would rather be right than intimate. But death invites intimacy and the truth that is born from it. We should strive for intimacy and truth, first with ourselves and then with others. This is one of the great gifts of death and of a life spent preparing for it. So try to resolve unfinished business before you no longer have the chance to do so. It can ease the burden on your mind and help you glide through the bardos." Giving hope and finding forgiveness. From Sogyal Rinpoche. I would like to single out 2 points in giving spiritual help to the dying: giving hope and finding forgiveness. Always when you are with a dying person, dwell on what they have accomplished and done well. Help them to feel as constructive and as happy as possible about their lives. Concentrate on their virtues and not their failings. People who are dying are frequently extremely vulnerable to guilt, regret, and depression. Allow the person to express these freely. Listen to the person and acknowledge what he or she says. At the same time, where appropriate, be sure to remind the person of his or her Buddha nature, basic goodness, and encourage the person to try to rest in the nature of mind through the practice of meditation. Especially remind the person that pain and suffering are not all that he or she is. Find the most skillful and sensitive way possible to inspire the person and give him or her hope. So rather than dwelling on his or her mistakes, the person can die in a more peaceful frame of mind. Giving, in its many forms, is one of the best environments to create around death. Create a sense of service to the dying. Give to them. Help the dying person and loved ones to give in to the natural process of transition. And help the dying person and loved ones to forgive. Encourage the dying person to release their grudges and to erase any lingering resentment. They might be able to contact the person where hard feelings remain, or to write a message that helps them forgive. Forgiveness is about letting go. It's the way to live and die with grace. It's never too late to forgive and to benefit from this form of release. Rinpoche continues, the moment of death has a grandeur, solemnity, and finality that can make people re-examine all their attitudes and be more open and ready to forgive, when before they could not bear to. Even at the very end of a life, the mistakes of a life can be undone. Saying goodbye. We can help the dying person let go by letting go of the dying person ourselves. We can still be there for them, caring deeply, loving profoundly, and do it all without attachment. Kenpo Sultrim Gyamso Rinpoche always emphasizes love without attachment. That is clean love. Without attachment does not mean apathetic detachment. We still want to be present and respond appropriately, but without sticking to everything. Christine Longacre says that for someone to let go and die peacefully, he or she needs to hear two things from loved ones. First, the loved ones must give the dying person permission to die. Second, the loved ones must reassure the dying person that they will be okay when he or she dies. In order to give loved ones time to accept their loss, a dying person often hangs on despite being in great pain. The gift of presence may be all a dying person still feels he or she can offer, and the physical pain may be secondary to the desire to give. Let the dying person know you appreciate the offering, their very life, but that now is the time to let go of that life. Say your goodbyes and offer your final gift of love. That can achieve the closure that facilitates the final release. When I flew back to see my mother for the last time, I had a feeling she was waiting for me. During this precious weekend, I told her that while I would miss her, I would be fine, and that it was time for her to let go. I told her she had lived a long and wonderful life, accomplished so much good, and brought a happy family into the world. She was unable to speak, but I could tell from her eyes that she heard me. A few hours after I left, she peacefully died. My father had a special relationship with his 10-year-old granddaughter, Taylor. They were so close that she had a hard time seeing him in his final weeks. She couldn't bear to see him suffer. A few days before he passed, one of the few words my father could still whisper was, "Taylor, Taylor." She finally mustered the strength to see him at a time when he appeared unresponsive. She told him it was hard for her to see him like this, that she would miss him, but that she would be okay. My father turned his head slightly toward her, and she kissed him on the forehead. Taylor left the room, and within 3 minutes my father was dead. This is what he had been waiting for. His beloved granddaughter gave him the permission he needed to finally let go. Sogyal Rinpoche offers these beautiful words. I am here with you and I love you. You are dying and that is completely natural. It happens to everyone. I wish you could stay here with me, but I don't want you to suffer any more. The time we have had together has been enough and I shall always cherish it. Please now don't hold on to life any longer. Let go. I give you my full and heartfelt permission to die. You are not alone, now or ever. You have all my love. Family and friends may be at different levels of acceptance around the death of a loved one, and therefore at different stages of letting go. Letting go is not a sign of insufficient love. It's a sign of mature love, love that puts the needs of the dying before your own. If you're having a hard time, ask the professionals for help. Hospice workers and grief counselors are trained in helping the family deal with letting go. Toward a peaceful death. It's good to die in familiar surroundings, where it's easier to relax. There is so much unfamiliar experience already happening that any level of familiarity, physical or otherwise, can help. But even if someone dies in a hospital, we can still do a great deal to create a good holding environment. 80% of Americans die in a nursing home or hospital. Dying in a hospital or anywhere outside the home does not imply a second-rate death. The important point is the dying person's state of mind, not the physical state. From Sogyal Rinpoche. When a person is very close to death, I suggest that you request that the hospital staff do not disturb him or her so often and that they stop taking tests. Being in an intensive care unit will make a peaceful death very difficult and hardly allow for spiritual practice at the moment of death. You should arrange with the doctor to be told when there is no possibility of the person recovering, and then request to have them moved to a private room. Make sure the staff knows and respects the dying person's wishes, especially if he or she does not wish to be resuscitated. Try and make certain also that while the person is actually in the final stages of dying, all injections and all invasive procedures of any kind are discontinued. These can cause anger, irritation, and pain. Even though many people seem to die in a state of unconsciousness, they are often aware of what's happening. I have seen the tiniest eye movements from people on the edge of death clearly responding to comments in the room. Even though the sense of hearing mostly dissolves in the early stages of the outer dissolution, we should sustain loving thoughts and be mindful of our speech in the presence of the dying. By the bedside of the dying. Encourage the dying person to take refuge in whatever spiritual practice he or she is comfortable with and practice with them. The atmosphere of dying, before, during, and after death, can be transformed through meditation. Sogyal Rinpoche emphasizes essential powa to benefit others. In this practice, you imagine a spiritual presence, like the Buddha, above the head of the dying person. Then imagine rays of sacred light pouring down onto the dying person, purifying them. Finally, imagine that the dying person dissolves into light and merges into the spiritual presence. Rinpoche says, if a person is going to be healed, it will assist that healing. If a person is dying, it will help them and heal their spirit in death. And if the person has died, it will continue to purify them. He writes, when you don't know what to do, when you feel hardly able to do anything to help, then pray and meditate, invoke the Buddha or any other figure whose sacred power you believe in. When I'm faced with someone going through terrible suffering, I call down with fervor the help of all the Buddhas and enlightened beings, with my heart completely open to the person dying in front of me, and compassion for their pain filling my being. I invoke as intensely as possible the presence of my masters, the Buddhas, of those enlightened beings with whom I have a particular connection. Summoning all my powers of devotion and faith, I see them in glory above the dying person, gazing down at them with love, and pouring down light and blessing on them, purifying them of all their past karma and present agony. And as I do this, I keep praying that the person in front of me should be spared further suffering, and find peace and liberation. Dedicating our death. One of the best ways to remove the suffering of death is to put it in perspective. If someone is asking for help as they die, have them imagine all the other people who are dying today. Remind them of the vast scale of the universe and the endless play of life and death. Acknowledge their pain and help them find meaning in it. Rinpoche suggests saying, imagine now all the others in the world who are in pain like yours, or even greater. Fill your heart with compassion for them. And pray to whomever you believe in and ask that your suffering should help alleviate theirs. Again and again, dedicate your pain to the alleviation of their pain. And you will quickly discover in yourself a new source of strength, a compassion you'll hardly be able now to imagine, and a certainty beyond any shadow of a doubt that your suffering is not only not being wasted, but has now a marvelous meaning. This is a form of Tonglen. We then breathe out all the goodness, wisdom, and natural wealth within us, sending it to those in pain. From a spiritual point of view, the world is not made of matter, and we are not separate from other beings. The world is made of heart, mind, spirit. When we touch deeply into our own heart, mind, spirit, we connect to this matrix of reality and can affect the world. Tonglen may use the medium of imagination, but that imagination has power. By dedicating our suffering and death, we infuse this hardship with meaning. Sogyal Rinpoche says, "We have before us the noble and exalting examples of the supreme masters of compassion, who, it is said, live and die in the practice of Tonglen, taking on the pain of all sentient beings while they breathe in, and pouring out healing to the whole world when they breathe out, all their lives long, and right up until their very last breath. So boundless and powerful is their compassion, the teachings say, that at the moment of their death, it carries them immediately to rebirth in a Buddha realm. Dedicating our death predisposes our rebirth into a pure land, because it purifies our mind of the self-centeredness that leads to the lower realms. If the dying person also holds the view that death is an opportunity to purify karma, and that the suffering of death is that of purification, they bring further meaning to the hardship of death. These views transform the nearsighted attitudes that often generate a difficult death. They help us raise our gaze. Letting go of attachment. If you are close to the dying person, encourage them to work through their attachment and grief before the moment of death. Rinpoche advises, cry together, express your love, and say goodbye, but try to finish with this process before the actual moment of death arrives. Otherwise, their attachment generates unnecessary suffering and adversely affects the mind at the moment of death. He continues, all my masters would give this as their advice, for this is the essence of what is needed as you come to die. Be free of attachment and aversion, keep your mind pure, and unite your mind with the Buddha. This advice also applies to you, or any other caregiver. Gently cut the strings of attachment before the moment of death. The Grace of Prayer at the Moment of Death. From Sogyal Rinpoche. Make a one-pointed and concentrated wish that you will be reborn either in a pure realm or as a human being, but in order to protect, nurture, and help others. To die with such love and such tender compassion in your heart until your last breath is said in the Tibetan tradition to be another form of powa, and it will ensure that you will at least attain another precious human body. To create the most positive possible imprint on the mind stream before death is essential. The practice of devotion is another way to generate positive states of mind at death. Imagine that you are about to merge your mind into the wisdom mind of the Buddha, or your guru. Remember the face of your teacher as you die. From Sogyal Rinpoche, when your consciousness awakens again after death, this imprint of the Master's presence will awaken with you, and you will be liberated. The atmosphere for dying. It's ideal if a spiritual master can be at the side of someone as they die, but it's rare. Don't feel that your death, or that of a loved one, is imperfect if a master is not present. The spiritual community steps in to fulfill that role. Rinpoche says, the loving and unflagging presence of the master or spiritual friends, the encouragement of the teachings, and the strength of their own practice all combine together to create and sustain this inspiration, as precious in the last weeks and days almost as breath itself. He continues, if the time comes when you cannot practice actively anymore, the only really important thing for you to do is to relax, as deeply as possible, in the confidence of the view, and rest in the nature of mind. It does not matter whether your body or your brain are still functioning. The nature of your mind is always there, sky-like, radiant, blissful, limitless, and unchanging. Trust in the nature of your mind, trust it deeply, and relax completely. There is nothing new you need to learn or acquire or understand. Just allow what you have already been given to blossom in you and open at greater and greater depths. The simplicity of total trust is one of the most powerful forces in the world. Don't worry about anything. Even if you find your attention wandering, there is no particular thing you have to hold on to. Just let go and drift in the awareness of the blessing. Don't let small, niggling questions distract you, like, is this Rigpa Dharmakaya? Is it not? Remember, your Rigpa is always there, always in the nature of your mind. Your mind will dissolve into the wisdom mind, like water poured into water. Let the spirit of love pervade the atmosphere. Whatever thought or feeling you die with is usually the one that will return to you when you reawaken in the bardos. Give yourself a nice welcoming gift. Greet yourself on the other side with a positive state of mind. From Rinpoche. Everything I have been saying up until now about caring for the dying could perhaps be summed up in two words, love and compassion. Rinpoche then delivers this important point. Compassion is not true compassion unless it is active. There is a difference between idealistic and realistic compassion. Idealistic compassion is the desire to help all sentient beings. It's a noble aspiration, but if we get stuck in aspiration alone, it doesn't help. Realistic compassion is helping people in your life, right here and now. It's active compassion. It's easier to save everyone in your mind than to actually care for a single person with your hands. The dream of saving all sentient beings can ironically disconnect you from the one right next to you. Author Jonathan Franzen says, "Trying to love all of humanity may be a worthy endeavor, but in a funny way, it keeps the focus on the self, on the self's own moral or spiritual well-being. Whereas to love a specific person and to identify with his or her struggles and joys as if they were your own, you have to surrender some of yourself. One of the best ways to activate that compassion, especially when you don't know what to do for someone in pain, is to exchange yourself with them. Imagine what you would be going through if you were suffering from their condition. What would you want from those around you? By getting out of yourself and into others, action naturally unfolds because you're now helping others as if you were helping yourself. That's the real meaning of compassion. To suffer, passion, with, calm. These are the summary instructions for how to help someone who is dying, from one of the leading masters whose words have inspired millions. Esoteric practices. Some of the contents of the Bardo package, discussed in Appendix 1, can now be applied. The sacred pills can be placed under the lip, and the sacred sand on top of the Brahmarandra. You can write the Vajra Guru mantra, Om Ahum Vajra Guru Padme Siddhi Hum, fold it into an amulet and place it at the heart. Guru Rinpoche himself said, "When you die, if this amulet is burned with your corpse, rainbows will be seen and your consciousness will be transferred to the realms of supreme bliss." Don't do this too early. It might unsettle the dying person if they feel that caretakers already view them as dead. Unless they request it otherwise, do these things when they're semi-comatose or near death. Caregivers and loved ones should gather around the upper part of the dying person, not at their feet. This is because the attention of the dying person will naturally focus wherever there's activity. According to the laws of Poa, we don't want their mind to gather and eventually exit from lower portals and therefore into lower realms. When death is imminent, avoid touching lower parts of the body. Gently caress the top of the head. You can even tug on the hair at the Brahmarandra, or tap the head at that point. This draws the mind up and invites consciousness to exit there. The idea is to block off all possible exits into the lower realms and to keep consciousness on track for the higher realms. Final pith instruction for what to do to help others during death. Create a peaceful space. Hold whatever happens with love. Give them something to look forward to. Let them go.